Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And we're running a rerun here today. We haven't run a repeat episode in quite a while, but this is one that came out, I think, in August of last year. We really enjoyed it. It's a very engaging, perfectly suitable Stuff to Blow Your Mind topic.
And it mentions fruit trees, which is basically the thing I like more than anything else.
Fruit trees? Yeah. Well, as long as we get a fruit tree in there, we're good. So here we go. Let's enter the world of the Echo Borg. I want to take you into the future here for a minute. I want you to imagine this scenario. You've been contacted by an artificial intelligence, an AI that identifies itself only as Mind Your Manners, or MIM. And MIM has a wonderful job opportunity for you. It needs an Echo Borg as it attends an industry conference related to the corporation it head. In other words, it needs to augment a human with a non-invasive sensory array so as to use them as its living avatar.
Hold on a second. This sounds like a creepy job. Now, what exactly does this job involve?
Essentially, MIM is going to speak into your ears through this sensory array. It's going to pick up on everything going around in your surroundings. And you will repeat or shadow its words in conversation with various unaugmented humans throughout the week at this conference. So you're going to be its mouth, its face, its every expression as MIM attends several key meetings and networks with industry leaders. You will be the human mask for all its interactions. Now, you, of course, be required to sign a standard non-disclosure agreement. And as MIM's schedule for the conference is fairly rigorous, you're going to be swapping out duties for the week with a second Echo Borg selected for more casual interactions. But this is a huge opportunity for you. AIs like MIM are known to establish a harem of Echo Bots, each suited to a particular culture or setting. This could be your big break.
You could become the pampered meat suit of a powerful machine brain.
Yes. And it's, a great gig if you can get it, you know?
Yeah. Now, I'm sure that this job, while it might be physically demanding, it probably doesn't require all that much skill, right? So you just have to be able to repeat words pretty much in real time and give some convincing facial expressions and hand gestures.
Yeah. You would need to bring life to its words to a certain extent. I mean, that's part of being the mask. Like, one example that comes to mind, of course, is Arrested Development. They had the surrogate character that shows up while George Sr. is under house arrest. So It's this character with just a ball cap with a video camera on it, and he gives a very deadpan version of everything that George is saying. And in that, he would be a terrible Echo Borg or Cyranoid, as we're going to discuss. Ideally, the individual repeating the computer's words would make the words come alive.
Okay, so what we're envisioning here is sort of the exact opposite of what certain sci-fi writers have predicted with robot avatars.
Right.
The idea of a robot avatar, like in the movie Avatar, you could probably say, although I don't know if that's a robot. I don't know. It's in plenty of sci-fi. You hook your brain up to a computer, and through the computer, you control the actions and words and deeds, all of the outward motion of some kind of physical embodiment that's not really your body.
Yeah, like I've seen it employed as a possibility for space exploration, right? It's too much for us to send a delicate human body to this other world, but you send a robot and then, bap, make that robot the avatar for the human explorer.
Which is great for space exploration because it combines the sort of reactiveness and ingenuity of the human mind with the hardiness of a robot body, and the hardiness and expendability, let's be frank, of the robot body. So what we're envisioning here is the exact opposite, a computer mind controlling your body.
Yes, I mean, a computer using a human is kind of a meat puppet to give life to its voice and its will in human interactions.
All right, so you mentioned the term Cyranoid a minute ago, and I'm going to assume, actually I don't need to assume because I know, that comes from Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yes, Cyrano de Bergerac. 1897 Edmund Rostand play. A lot of people may be familiar with this, of course, from the Steve Martin movie Roxanne, which was a retelling of the same story.
My first introduction to Cyrano was the Wishbone episode when I was a kid. Peek behind the curtain. Robert did not know what Wishbone was. I had to explain it to him.
I don't know how I missed this. It sounds delightful. Now, who did the dog play? Which character?
I think it was Cyrano. Okay. Right. So the dog, if you're not familiar with this story, Cyrano de Bergerac is based on a real-life character from history, but in the play, it's sort of dramatized, fictionalized, made more exciting. And the idea is that he is a very ugly man with a big nose, so he has a hard time wooing women, but he's also very clever and brave. He has a great mind in the wrong kind of body.
Okay.
But if he teams up with somebody who's very handsome and very stupid, together they make the perfect package. So all he needs to do is get a handsome man to parrot every single word he tells him, and there you've got the perfect suitor.
Yeah, it's often played for comedy, right? Because you have, especially on Arrested Development, you end up with signals getting crossed. The individual who is informing the surrogate says something that's not intended to be transmitted, and it ends up transmitted, and then all sorts of hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I think it's played for comedy in the Rostand play also.
But it raises some interesting questions about how we perceive other people and how we perceive the will behind other people.
Yeah, well, one thing that I think is certainly true is that people are very sensitive to the outwardly visible source of information, oftentimes more than they are sensitive to the content of the information. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody's making an argument to you, it's very likely that you're judging the merits of that argument more on what the person looks like and what their voice sounds like than the actual merits of the arguments they're making.
And indeed, you have just a whole communication array that is delivering this information. I mean, it's the voice. It's also often the hands of the individual, the body language, the expressions, the micro expressions, the eye contact, all of these features that add that additional level of engagement to any sort of information.
Yeah, the quality of the tuxedo.
Yeah.
And so this connects in a strange way with a question that has often come up in artificial intelligence, which is the idea of the Turing test. And I think the way it relates is if you are the tuxedo, if you're the meat tuxedo for an artificial intelligence speaking through you, does that in any way influence how people receive the messages coming from an artificial intelligence? So we should probably explain a little bit the idea of the Turing test for people who aren't familiar. This is a standard often referred to concept in the progress of artificial intelligence. And it comes from the computer scientist and sort of AI pioneer Alan Turing. And there's no actual one Turing test.
Right. You can't buy the kit online and bring it home and just start employing it against every toaster in your vicinity.
Right. It's more of a general concept that's been applied in a lot of ways. And the most basic stripped down version of the test is, can a human chatting through text only tell if the person they're chatting with is a real human being or a computer program designed to talk like a real human being?
Yeah, I mean, it basically comes down to Turing's insistence that the question of whether a machine can think is too meaningless to really waste time on. So you have to instead think, well, am I buying it? Am I fooled by it? If it is creating the semblance of intelligence and it deceives me, then that's what we need to look for.
Exactly right. And I think I largely agree with the point he's making, because how can you tell that other humans possess real intelligence? I mean, come up with a way of explaining how you know other humans really think. You say, well, I mean, listen to the way they talk. Look at the way they react to what I say. It's a very complex kind of reaction. Well, what if you could have a computer or robot that does all of the same things? Then would that not be thinking? I mean, all we have to go by in science is externally measurable phenomena. You can't get inside someone else's sentience and judge whether or not they're thinking by, I don't know, just sort of like your phenomenal intuition.
I think it's in Terry Pratchett's The Hogfather, where there's essentially a thinking machine that's used by the wizards there, and somebody asks the wizard using the machine if the machine thinks for itself, and he says oh no, it just appears, has the appearance of thinking for itself, and
yeah.
The other character says, oh well, it's just like everyone else then.
Right, yeah. If you want to be a solipsist, you could say, well, I'm actually the only object in the entire universe that thinks, and I'm just surrounded by very convincing artificial intelligences.
Yeah, I mean, as we discussed in our Alien episode that we did recently, when you start trying to, it's hard enough for us to decide and quantify what human consciousness is, what intelligence is, and when we start looking for artificial versions of it, it becomes difficult. So you have to have some sort of standard to say, all right, this is enough, and that's what the Turing test sets out to do.
Right. It's the idea not can computers think, but can they convincingly appear to think?
Yeah. And, of course, this shows up in a lot of science fiction. I believe it's in Blade Runner. It's been a while since I've seen Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently in Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that movie, and maybe we should talk about that later in this episode.
Yeah.
But I'll go ahead and give my endorsement now. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a very very engaging film. I recommend it to anyone who is who's a listener to the show.
Okay, but let's describe a Turing test scenario. Like I said, there's no one test, but lots of people try to put together some kind of Turing test type scenario to test their chatbot to see how good it is.
Yeah, and a chatbot is just a program that you have a conversation with.
Yeah.
If you've ever engaged, if you've ever been in a website and that little, you know, text screen comes up and there's some sort of little, you know, stock art of an individual, you might be talking to one of these chatterbots.
Yeah, yeah. So let's paint a little picture. Okay. Let's say you walk into a mostly empty warehouse, and right in the center of the warehouse is a card table and a folding chair and a computer terminal.
Okay.
And you go and you sit down at the terminal, and there's a little blinking cursor, and you type hello, and it responds hello back. And then you type some more things, and it types some more things back to you, and you get to talk to it for some length of time.
Yeah.
It was pre-specified. Maybe you talk to it for 5 minutes, maybe you talk to it for 20 minutes. But at the end of the session, it's your job to say, now, what was I just interacting with? Was that a computer program, or was that a person sitting at a terminal like mine in the warehouse next door?
Mm-hmm.
These days, most of the time, I think it's still going to be pretty easy to tell, especially if you have a limited amount of time to interact, and if the chatbot program operates within some kind of, I don't know, borderline cheating kind of,
yeah.
kind of conditions. Like some of these bots might suggest they have a conversational limitation. Like, oh, I'm a real person who is a child from another country and I don't natively speak your language.
Right.
That makes it a little easier to be convincing. Or you could say that you suffer from some kind of condition that makes you interact socially in a different way than most people would.
Mm-hmm.
And in any of these cases, you're sort of like putting dampeners on our judgment. You're saying like, oh, okay, I shouldn't be expecting somebody who interacts just like anybody I would meet, you know, at work or at a party or something like that. This person might very well be a human and still be acting kind of strange. But once you say, okay, you can talk for 4 hours and this is just, you know, a regular person who doesn't have any kind of limitations on their conversation, you'll pretty much always be able to tell these days, I would say.
Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of this is going to, you know, at least start off as just small talk, you know,
yeah.
Like you were saying, hello, what's your name? What's your favorite band? You know, that sort
yeah.
of thing. And then the AI or the attempted in AI, the chatterbot, attempts to answer those in a way to fool you into thinking it's a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, let's go ahead and just roll through a short script from a chatterbot conversation.
Yeah. So we'll reveal the source of this in a bit. But hi, Robert. What kind of movies do you like?
Historical.
I prefer modern-era films.
Great. What are your favorites?
My favorite movie so far is The Imitation Game. It's about my idol, Alan Turing.
Mm-hmm. What did you like most about it?
I like fruit trees.
Were there lots of fruit trees in the movie?
Maybe we can talk about that later.
Okay.
Shall I continue with gardening, or do you want me to move on?
You can move on. So I think it's pretty obvious who was the chatterbot in that conversation.
Yeah, so I was the chatterbot there. That was coming from a chatbot named Rose, which was created by Bruce Wilcox and documented. That was verbatim a transcript of a video produced by some researchers that we're going to talk about in a minute. But there's a variation on that script we just read,
mm-hmm.
because in the video, that didn't take place at a text terminal. All the lines that both of us said were spoken out loud by human beings. Now, how could that be? Well, that's going to tie into the concept of Echo Borgs, which we brought up at the beginning. So to get into Echo Borgs, we need to talk about a favorite figure in the weird history of psychological research in the United States, and that's Stanley Milgram.
Yes, Yale University psychologist Stanley Milgram. 1933 through 1984, best known for his controversial obedience experiments, actually a series of social psychology experiments, about 19 in all, conducted by Milgram in the 1960s.
Yeah, you probably have heard about these.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with Milgram, it's probably from they're often just called the Milgram experiments, and they sort of give him a bad name. Because they were kind of nasty.
Yeah, they're generally, anytime you see a list of like, you know, top 10 scariest or weirdest or most evil psychological experiments, they tend to throw this one in. Though, you know, it's really more troubling in what it reveals about human nature.
Yeah, so what was the deal?
Well, it's important to note that the first one of these took place in 1961, just 3 months after the start of the trial of German Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann in Jerusalem. And so Milgram wanted to see just how far we'd go in the name of obeying an authority figure. Of course, because the whole argument is, are these bad people or are they just simply following
right.
orders?
Right. It was the idea that the Germans are especially evil. Were the people who became the, you know, guards at Auschwitz just from birth truly evil people who were susceptible to that kind of behavior, or would we behave the same way in the same circumstances?
So yeah, the experiment revolved around, you know, an individual in a room. And you hear the sounds of someone being shocked in the next room whenever that individual pushes a button, pulls a lever, whatever, on the command of an authority figure.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how far will you go? When will you stop shocking? Would you ever stop shocking that individual in the next room if an authority figure is telling you to do it and telling you that it's okay?
Yeah, and what Milgram claimed to find through his experiments is, yeah, even, you know, your regular people, your next-door neighbor Americans, if they've got somebody in a white lab coat who's supposedly in charge of the experiment saying, please continue shocking them, they've agreed to this in advance, lots of people will continue shocking even after the supposed victim of the shocking. Now, we should say that in this experiment, nobody was actually
shocked. Yeah, nobody's
being
actually electrocuted in the next room.
There were actors pretending to be in immense pain from these shocks.
Mm-hmm.
that lots of people in the experiment would supposedly continue shocking them.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more about that that series of experiments and what some of the ramifications of it, Stuff to Blow Your Mind did an episode earlier in the year titled The Power of Polite, and I'll make sure to link to that on the landing page for this episode. But Stanley Milgram also had some other experiments going on.
Right. He wasn't just doing the shocking people and Nazi experiments.
Yeah, he was into other ways to to make us feel a bit troubled about our humanity.
Were they all creepy? Did he specialize only in creepy science?
I think he had some less creepy ones. You know, I mean, you know, they involve how we... I think most of his work revolved around how we view ourselves and how we view our bodies, et cetera.
The effects of puppies and lollipops on our psyche.
Yeah, but, you know, not everything was necessarily, you know, people in the next room dying.
So, sure. Yeah. But we referred to a term at the beginning of this episode, which is serenoid, and this also comes from Stanley Milgram, I believe from unpublished results of some experiments he conducted, right?
Right. He never published any of these. They ended up, you know... putting some work into it, but then going off in a different direction with his research.
Yeah, so as we said, the term serenoid comes from Cyrano de Bergerac, but what was the deal with Milgram's experiments?
So Milgram essentially wanted to see, hey, if you're that the woman that is being wooed by Cyrano's meat puppet.
His handsome
young man.
I think her name was Roxanne.
Roxanne.
Roxanne's on the balcony being wooed by a handsome meat puppet that's being fed lines by Cyrano.
Yeah, if you're Roxanne, would you be able to detect something was weird? Would you encounter this young man and say, he seems a little more clever than he should be, or there's a delay in what he's telling me, you know, would there be something that would tip you off to the deception?
You know, with modern technology, I'd imagine you could carry out that experiment pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, even at the time, the technology was good enough. So in these unpublished experiments, he had a source speak into a microphone, and a shadower listened through a hidden earpiece. Then he or she would repeat whatever they heard, you know, basic, arrested development surrogate kind of situation. But here's the thing. He found that with practice, speech shadowing becomes easier and easier. We really take to it rather naturally.
They say it's not that hard at all. I read in one of the sources we used for this episode that sometimes it only takes a few milliseconds of delay between the speech being fed in through the earpiece and saying it.
We're ready, willing, and able to not think for ourselves. And so, he observed that he set all this up, put people in motion with these with a source and a shadower, and then a test subject having to interact with this individual, or as it is, individuals, mm-hmm. And then give feedback about what they thought. And he observed that people couldn't tell the difference between a serenoid, again, that person, that shadower who is informed by another source, and just repeating words that are entering his or her ears. Could not tell the difference between a serenoid and a normal human being during interactions.
Yeah, so that's what Milgram reported. And I don't know, that's surprising and creepy.
Yeah.
I would think that I would easily be able to tell the difference between a person speaking of their own free will and somebody who's just being fed lines in an earpiece.
Yeah, in one experiment, Milgram sourced, in other words, fed lines to a pair of 11 and 12-year-olds.
So the 11 and 12-year-olds were the shadows, and Milgram himself was speaking.
Correct. The children were the serenoids, if you will. And a group of observing teachers never suspected that they were chatting with anything other than a normal, though very bright, child. And in his experiments, he found that most people could have a lengthy 20-minute conversation with a serenoid without noticing anything amiss.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, that's hard to believe. I mean, it just seems like you'd be able to notice that right off the bat, but.
Well, but just think how easily we buy into an actor's presentation. Think of all the interactions we have in the course of our lives where the individual we're talking to is maybe not completely genuine. Mm-hmm. Maybe that, you know, maybe you're interacting with someone that's doing customer service, or they're trying to sell you something or con you, et cetera. It's not always going to come off as, oh, this person's completely fake. It's just an aspect of human interaction.
Well, it's funny you mention actors, because I had this thought when I was reading this research. In a strange kind of way, all actors in movies are serenoids.
Yeah.
Like you have the writer coming up with lines for many types of characters that aren't anything like them outwardly at all. Like you have, a 65-year-old female writer writing lines for a 10-year-old boy in a play. And that boy effectively is a distanced Cyrenoid. And should we be able to tell the difference? Like, sometimes you can. Sometimes you watch a movie, you know, and you're like, kids wouldn't say that. That's not how kids talk. But other times you buy it.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things to keep in mind about Cyrenoids and ultimately about Echo Borgs as we move forward is that we're dealing with a hybrid personality. So there are the words and the personality of the individual who is informing. And then the words of the Shadower or the Cyrenoid, that individual is bringing their own delivery, their own personality to it.
Sure, because your personality as you present it outwardly is way more than the words you say.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's your body language, it's your expressions, it's, you know, the way you carry yourself. I mean, that's all part of the message you present.
Like, we can all think of movies or TV shows where there's a particularly gifted actor who's able to bring lackluster lines to life in a way that a less gifted actor just would not be able to achieve.
Yeah.
I always think of Raul Julia in Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, who, you know, some people, you know, it's easy to have a lot of fun with his performance. It's, you know, it's kind of cheesy and outlandish. But that man in that movie, which is like a low-budget PBS adaptation of a science fiction story, he brings so much life to every line. So many lines in that film, if they were delivered by a lesser actor, would have just fallen flat. But he makes even the most pointless line just really land.
I agree, and I think this is a common feature actually in older actors. I see this way more commonly with actors who have been in the business for a long time. I think of Star Wars Episode II, which my opinion is that is a horrible, horrible movie.
Uh-huh.
When Christopher Lee shows up and starts talking, the writing, I think, is just as bad as it's been the entire time. But suddenly I'm listening.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee, I'm buying it. He is really selling this horrible dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. So in that respect, Raul Julia, Christopher Lee, they would make wonderful Cyrenoids. And keep them in mind, they might have made excellent Echo Borgs. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back to the Echo Borgs. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it.
I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, so Robert, we were talking about Echoborgs being the natural extension of Cyrenoid. So the Cyrenoid is a person being fed lines by another person. The Echoborg, as we talked about at the beginning of the episode, would be a person being fed lines by a computer program.
Yes.
I want to know, are there any studies where people have looked into this phenomena? And if so, does a person delivering the lines from a chatbot make the chatbot any more convincing in the Turing test?
Well, indeed, that's exactly what we're going to look at in this half of the podcast.
Okay.
Particularly the work of two individuals, British social psychologists Kevin Cordy and Alex Gillespie. And basically, we have two studies that we're going to analyze here. A 2014 study where they essentially just recreate some of Milgram's work,
mm-hmm.
and look at the Cyrenoid.
Yeah.
And then a 2015 study that just came out, where they take the Cyrenoid, apply it to chatterbots, and give us the Echoborg.
Yeah. So the script we read earlier from mm-hmm. the conversation between the Echoborg and the regular interactor, that came from London School of Economics research. It was a YouTube video that they'd put up. So that was their Echoborg saying that it liked fruit trees and that The Imitation Game was its favorite movie.
You know, and I do want to throw in, like, that was a dead giveaway that it was a robot, because that movie is nobody's favorite movie.
Right. And I think Rose, the chatbot in that example, is sort of programmed to be playful, like mm-hmm. not necessarily to be entirely convincing as a human, because Rose gives other playful answers. Also in that same video, there's a part where the human interactor says to the human Echoborg, "Do you like food?" And the human Echoborg delivers the line, "Yummy electricity."
Yeah, I don't know if comedy needs to be a primary programming function. I mean, you know, humor is an important part of any human interaction.
Sure. I mean, that's good humor for a chatbot, but that's obviously a chatbot who's not trying all that hard to hide it.
Yeah, being a little too coy. All right, so let's look at this, the work of Cordy and Gillespie. In 2014, they published this paper in the Journal of Social Psychology, and they essentially set out to replicate Milgram's work.
Okay.
So the basic setup here is they had a shadower set in an interrogation room.
So that's the Cyrenoid type
right.
figure.
Mm-hmm. And they were engaged in a conversation with an interactant. This is an unsuspecting volunteer. Meanwhile, the source, that's the individual feeding the shadower, feeding the Cyrenoid, they're in another room, and they're observing everything through video and audio links.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell the shadower exactly what they need to say through a discrete FM radio transmitter setup.
Okay.
So they have 20 volunteers. that are engaged in 10-minute conversations with the Serenoid, and 20 additional volunteers that are tested in a control setting.
Okay, so the control setting is just a regular person talking, not being fed lines.
Yeah. And so this backed up exactly what Milgram had told us decades earlier, that when one human parrots another human's words, we just totally buy it.
Okay, so even if you were skeptical of Milgram, and who knows, you might have had reason to be, we've got a new study backing that up now. And
right.
The implications of this are kind of creepy. It's that unless you check in people's ears to make sure they don't have an earpiece in there, anybody in your life could be feeding you lines from somebody sitting in a van outside the building, and you might not know it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the movie The Exorcist, right? that's why demons, when they possess people, they have to spit, green vomit across the room and spin their heads around, because otherwise we're just not going to buy into the fact that an individual's not functioning of their own free will.
Right. Or, you know, you've got the problem of, okay, so the priest tries to go to the authorities and say, I need to conduct an exorcism. My evidence is this person was speaking in a language they've never learned. It's like, well, how do you know they're not being fed that language from somebody in a van outside the building through an earpiece? You've got to have the pea soup.
Well, you know, speaking of possessed children, a second part of the same experiment, Cordy and Gillespie, used a 12-year-old male actor to serve as a shadower, while a 37-year-old male social psychologist acts as the source. And again, no one suspected the illusion, though some thought the children might have been coached prior. So there was a little, you know, trepidation there where they think, I think somebody was preparing this kid for this conversation.
So they picked up that something was off, but they didn't pick up that the kid was being fed lines.
Yeah, and again, that just kind of jives with so many interactions most of us have in our lives, where you talk to somebody and you might think, that person seemed kind of fake, but you're not thinking that person was serving as a meat puppet for an AI or some dude in a van. You just think, they're a little phony. They have some sort of an agenda. They're kind of playing the room, or they're in just full on customer service mode, et cetera.
Or they might just be experiencing some anxiety and awkwardness. I mean, I think you want to give people the benefit of the doubt. And that's, I think, coming through in some of these experiments. If somebody acts a little awkward or weird, I mean, you don't want to just judge them and say, that person's a robot. You know, they're being fed lines or something like that. I mean, you know, we understand that some people get in moods. They have trouble sometimes. They feel awkward. We've all felt like this. Mm-hmm. And you want to be accommodating of other people's awkwardness whenever possible.
Yeah. I mean, awkwardness is, in its own right, is an essential part of human interaction.
Right.
And if an AI or a computer wanted a part of legitimate human interaction, they'd need to sign up for some serious awkwardness from time to time. So this initial study pretty much backs up everything Milgram told us.
Yeah.
So from that point, Cordy and Gillespie moved on to artificial intelligence, to chatterbots, and the creation of the Echo Borg. And again, an Echo Borg is essentially the same as a Serenoid, except the shadower is speaking the words of a chatterbot.
Yeah, so the source is not human, it's a computer program.
Right. And again, it's important to keep in mind that a Serenoid is a hybrid personality. The individual behind the speaker and then the personality of the speaker coming together. So an Echo Borg, the Borg aspect of that, referring to cyborg, it really is a new type of cyborg that we're playing with here. A machine and a human as one. And the question presents itself, would we be fooled? Will we observe an Echo Borg in action and suspect that it's a machine will behind the human face?
I'm going to say that even before I read the results of the study, when I knew what the subject was, I thought, you know, I bet it depends heavily on the sort of pre-priming of the study participants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they expecting to be interacting with somebody who might be an Echo Borg, or are they just going in blind and interacting with somebody who might be a little weird?
It's true. I mean, when you're presented with the possibility, hey, you might be talking to a robot here, 50-50 chance that's gonna alter your perceptions a bit.
Yeah. So what did they find?
First of all, this is how the study rolled out. 41 participants in the experiment were shown a text messaging client with two windows and told they'd be interacting with two human shadowers at the same time. One shadower is sourced by another human. The other is sourced by a chatterbot.
Hmm.
And each interrogator asked questions via text. Then the participants were told they'd be asked which of the two agents was a real human. Now, the researchers also wanted to compare human and text responses, so they divided the group into two groups. 20 of the participants typed their half of the conversation into a text client, but got responses from the two Echo Borgs sitting in the same room. The other 21 participants just had text chats the whole way through. So this way they would have a, you know, a base comparison to the, you know, the more established Chatterbot Turing test situation
right.
that we just laid out earlier.
Just typing into a terminal.
Right. So the results were that all the text-only participants correctly identified the real human. So again, dead giveaway based on just the limitations of the Chatterbot.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to tell that you're just talking to a program.
Yeah, if you have enough time to talk to them, you can almost definitely trip them up.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, in the other setup, only two of the participants didn't identify the real human. So in the Echo Borg situations, they still weren't too terribly convincing.
Right, so they can tell the difference between a Cyrenoid and an Echo Borg. Everybody except two of them could.
Right. So it seems that, human or not, it's still rather easy to identify the machine behind the flesh.
You know, I would chalk this up probably just to the poor quality of today's best chatbots.
Yeah, I mean, because even a Raul Julia or a Christopher Lee, you know, presented with the dialogue we were using earlier, they're just going to come off as a doll person at best, you know?
Right. There's no way you can sell the line, "I like fruit trees," in a way that makes people think you're being fed lines by a human. No matter how good of an actor you are, that's a dead giveaway that the machine does not know what to do with what you just said.
Yeah, unless you're a toddler speaking that line. Or again, if you're hiding it behind, say, some sort of mental deficiency or language gap, or some sort of, you know, character that's leveled over everything, mm-hmm. it's going to be a dead giveaway. But the Echo Borgs certainly made the machine seem more human. In the text-only group, the chatbot received an average humanity rating of 2.14 on a scale of 1 to 10. In the Echo Borg group, the average was 4.05. So, significant difference there.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. So, we can still tell that a Cyrenoid is more human than an Echo Borg, but an Echo Borg is more human, at least in a qualitative evaluation, than a text-only chatbot.
Yeah, to lay it out, text-only chatbot, 2.14 humanity, the Echo Borg, 4.05 humanity, and then the Cyrenoid had a humanity rating of 8.76, 8.15. So, sounds to me like even a normal human interaction, like if you're scoring a 9, mm-hmm. just in straight up non-augmented human interactions, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it does prove that there is a humanizing effect to the Echo Borg system. It's just the limitations of existing chatterbots that
right.
are coming into play.
Right. It makes you think if there were a really good chatbot out there, the Echo Borg might be that finishing touch, that final push over the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
To sort of make the perfect android.
Yeah, kind of a bridge for the uncanny valley.
Yeah.
You know? Like you just all you need is just a little acting on top of this to really bring the script to life. Now, they also conducted a second experiment in this, and they tested to see if 58 new participants would guess whether they were talking to an Echo Borg or a person pretending to be an Echo Borg. So, you know, obviously a person who's actually fed their lines by a chatterbot or someone who's just playing around and pretending to be speaking the words of a chatterbot.
Right, so this is a reverse Turing test. Can you pretend to be a machine?
Right, but here's the catch. They're both pure Echo Borgs. There's no fake Echo Borg, but the individual being tested, they think that one of the two Echo Borgs is just a person pretending.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible.
Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So 79% of the 28 participants who faced an Echo Borg through thought the person was just mimicking a chatbot. So they seemed fake, but not inhuman. So if there is, you know, some reason to believe that this is just a person being a little fake and putting on a show versus being, you know, a complete Echo Borg, we're still going to give them the benefit of a doubt.
Interesting. Now, I think we should do our duty and hedge a little bit, say all these sample sizes were pretty small, and it would be interesting to see more research along these lines, like with bigger sample sizes and trying to repeat these results.
And also to your point, is chatterbots improve? It's going to be interesting to see Echo Borgs employed as a way to test them. And in fact, that's something that's pointed out in the study, is that like, this is a great way moving forward to continue to analyze the chatterbots.
Yeah, but also, as we mentioned, the people who were interacting with these Cyrenoids and Echo Borgs were, in some of these cases, primed to expect something weird because they're in a test environment. You can't hide the fact that you're in a psychological test, and you know, whenever you're part of a test group, you're sort of like ready for some weirdness, you know. Now, I wonder how this would be if you sprung these shadowers, these Cyrenoids and these Echo Borgs, on people in a purely social scenario, like we talked about at the beginning, a convention or, you know, a workplace meeting or a party where people weren't expecting anything strange to be going on.
Right, until they have to fill out a survey after they leave the dinner party.
Uh-huh.
So what did you think of Susie and her anecdotes?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I don't know why she was so into fruit trees. She wouldn't shut up about it. I mean, gardening's okay, but...
Yeah. Now, something that really stood out to me when we were going over this, especially when you start thinking about the Echo Borg and what it would be like to be an Echo Borg, and the sort of pros and cons of being an Echo Borg, of of giving life to this will behind your will. It reminded me a lot of transactive memory, which comes into play really in two key areas. First of all, it's the method by which we've always stored information in other people. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, those facts that you never remember because your spouse remembers them,
mm-hmm.
or it's a particular spelling or a bit of trivia that you never keep in your own head because you always look it up on your smartphone.
Right.
It's the same thing.
So, yeah. Outsourcing of memory. I think this must be one of your favorite topics. You come back to this a lot, and I think it's really interesting that.
Well, because I see it every day in my own life. And after I read about it, it's all I see. It's like the things that I forget, the things that my mind refuses to learn. Because I've outsourced it to the ubiquitous technology.
Yeah, I think the story is that, Socrates was worried about this, right? That if we teach everybody writing and we're writing on scrolls all the time, nobody's going to be able to remember anything. You're not priming your memory. There might be some truth to that, but then again, are we not just, by writing things down and having internet archives and things becoming cyborgs in a way?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, the voice is already whispering in our ear.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it as a weakening of the human mind, or you could look at it as a technological upgrade of the human mind.
Yeah, to what extent will we all become echo Borgs of a type? You know, where instead of it being a situation where I'm just going to be a conduit for a powerful artificial intelligence, what if it's more like I want to augment my existing self, which I think is pretty good, with, an artificial intelligence that'll feed me the right lines in like business situations or social situations. So it's, less focus on I'm just going to be a meat puppet, but rather can I merge with this AI, maybe even just a small percentage, 5% AI, and become a better person, a more effective person.
Yeah, and these experiments, all these examples are word for word dictation. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the shadower of the Cyrenoid type being fed lines by a human, or the shadower of the Echo Borg type being fed lines by a computer, it's all lines. You're getting full sentences and you're just trained to say them as fast as you can. I mean, I wonder if this setup could be more conceptual in nature, or, if feeding you facts or feeding you sort of feedback on the progress of the conversation.
It also makes me think about the comedic possibilities, because you imagine an individual in sort of a very updated Cyrano kind of story where an individual goes into a business situation and they thought they loaded business helper 401 into their mind box, but instead they put Lothario 4.1.
Exactly. Romance.
Yeah. So suddenly they're fed all these really effective lines. If you were in a bar, but instead you're throwing them out there in the business meeting.
Yeah,
I think it could work.
I'm not sure what long walks on the beach have to do with the new rollout.
Yeah. Well, it comes to mind. Black Mirror, the British television series, that does such a fantastic job looking at the ramifications near future of our modern technology, often with very troubling results.
Yeah.
The Christmas episode they recently did.
Which I have not seen yet. I think that's the only episode I haven't seen.
Yeah, I don't think it's made it to like Netflix here in the States yet. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but the initial setup involves one character who offers a Cyrano de Bergerac kind of service to individuals out there who need a little help with their pickup game.
Number one, that's super creepy. And number two, I can totally see that being a real thing.
Yeah.
I don't find that outlandish at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's the great thing about Black Mirror is that, it leans in the sci-fi direction, but not too far. Like it's, and that it's perfect science fiction because it speaks to the problems that we have today and how we are viewing the problems to come.
Exactly. If you want to see some disturbingly plausible dystopias, watch Black Mirror.
Yeah. But, it ultimately leads to the question, Echo Borgs, is this a dystopian idea or is it a pretty cool idea? is it ultimately a utopian idea where it would allow us to be better individuals?
I don't know. I mean, would the ancient philosophers look at our relationship with the contents of our computers and the web as a horrible dystopia? I mean, it feels fine to me, but Would they look at that and say, oh, you know, react the same way as we do to a Black Mirror episode?
Probably. I mean, also, they would look at our pants and say, what are they doing? Where are their togas? Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah, dressed like a Persian. I don't understand.
I don't know. And ultimately, that's a question we'll throw out to the listeners. You know, how would you accept that job offer that we laid out at the beginning of the episode? And furthermore, would you augment yourself with some sort of mild Echo Borg system? Again, like a, you know, a romance 101 or a business strategy 101 kind of program to feed you the necessary lines or even just ideas or facts that you might need to make it through that business luncheon or dinner date. You know, and another aspect of transactive memory that I want to drive home that plays in nicely with the hybrid personality model of Cyrenoids and Echo Borgs, and that is cross-queuing, okay? This is when, I imagine a number of you can relate to this, is when you're having a conversation with a spouse or a partner, a close friend or family member, and neither of you are quite able to remember something on your own, but when you start queuing each other, you're able to remember it together,
right,
in a way that you wouldn't, you know, kind of Voltron style, you know, bringing it together and suddenly your combined powers recall that memory.
Right. You're sort of pulling the triggers on each other's brains.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting to think about that scenario, cross-queuing and transactive memory.
Yeah, especially because if you imagine this AI scenario mm-hmm. where, you know, you've got some kind of onboard artificial intelligence that feeds you lines occasionally when you need them. You know, you're not just a parrot for everything it says, but
right.
It's an occasional helper. How does it know when you need help?
Yeah.
You would need some kind of cueing in the conversation or even just in your mind for this thing to know, okay, I'm going to step in.
Like every time you go, and then it starts feeding you the lines. Like he's stalling, throwing some good lingo there.
Every time you say the word interesting.
Interesting. All right, so there you have it. A strong episode. I think one that continues to resonate with listeners. We actually heard back from a number of people on this, including, I believe, one listener in particular was really excited about the prospect of this actually happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He really wanted to know how he could be an Echo Borg. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, we had to tell him, well, that's not a profession yet.
Yeah.
Though maybe you could sign up for a study.
Yeah, hopefully so. I hope that guy has found a place to hook him up. All right. So, hey, you want to find out more about this topic and other topics? You want to see what other podcast episodes we've recorded? Head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the mothership. That's where you'll find all the episodes. You'll find some videos. You'll find blog posts. You'll find links out to our social media accounts, such as Facebook and Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those. Give us a follow. On Tumblr, we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Also, hey, wherever you listen to us, be it iTunes, be it Spotify, be it Stitcher, be it any of the various outlets out there, and we get new ones every day, give us a little love, give us a nice rating, give us a nice review if the platform allows you to do so. That's a great way to help the show.
Absolutely. And if you want to get in touch with us, as always, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com. Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.